So I just want to begin by wishing each of you the presence of God in abundance. We need Him in our hearts. And we're here to worship Him. Our text will be taken from Gospel of Matthew chapter 25, and we'll start reading that in a bit. But I just want to say a couple of words of maybe a greeting to each of you, and it's good to be with you in those kinds of formalities and get those out of the way. And I really am glad to be here. And it always feels like, I think especially for Esther, as though we're coming home, and it's a good place to come to. And I'm reminded of the proverb where it says that a good report from a far country is like cold water on a hot day, or to a parched throat, or something like that. And I'm just encouraged to see that there is a good report here, that people are active in serving God, and I just want to encourage you in that and bless you in it. And we've already seen it in our 2 days here. Good reports from God working at the camp. We heard several stories, and also just the discussion this morning in Sunday school. The vibrancy that we feel here. God bless you for that. And then also I wanted to give two sentences on what we're doing in Kansas. If you've lost track of us, we are teaching at the school there. And I'm in my third year of teaching. And it's a large school of about 100 students in a large community of many, many families. So it's interesting to feel sort of the intimate feel that is here, a smaller feel that is here maybe, as compared to where we're from. But pray for us as we are in Kansas, and for now, serving the Lord there to the best of our abilities. Okay, Matthew 25, verse 14, if you found your place. This is the parable of the talents. And I suppose familiar to all of us, at least the adults. And for you children, you'll listen as we read. This is an interesting story. I just want to say, before we read, the two kind of traditional understandings of this passage in Matthew 25. You remember that there's a master, and there are three servants. And the kind of largely held view is that the master, actually both views that I found, the master is God, or Jesus. But then the two views, where the views varied was, who are the servants? And one view says that they are us, it's us, as we are waiting Christ's return. And that's a largely held view. And St. Augustine held this view, and maybe Chrysostom, I'm not sure who else, early church writers, leaders. But there's another school of thought that says it was the Jews. The unprofitable servant was the nation of Israel, who betrayed God's trust and didn't carry out their charge to be the light to the nations, to the world. And then the one with two talents is the disciples, and the one with five is the church. So in either case, you choose the definition or the interpretation that you think is the most accurate. Remember that it is said in the Mount of Olives, where Jesus is talking about the transfer from the nation of Israel to the disciples. So the second view I mentioned, actually, I think is a very legitimate way of looking at it. But we won't be spending much time trying to come to an understanding or talking about who is who. I just want to look at, the main thing I want to be looking at is kind of the differences in how we today take on the trust that God gave us. Because I think that's a very legitimate reading of the passage. So as we read, think of that. There are stark differences between the first two servants and the third servant, how they viewed the trust that God gave them. So let's read Matthew 25:14. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. His Lord said to them, Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also, who had received 2 talents, came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he, who had received the 1 talent, came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have at least received back my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Join me in spending a few minutes looking at this passage here in the, for this morning. The title, or what I'd like, if I would have a title for it, it might be something like The Parable of the Talents, A Study in Differences. The Parable of the Talents, A Study in Differences. Where are these differences? To me, there are 3, if you notice these servants, the first 2 versus the 3rd one. The differences lie in how they viewed the thing they were entrusted with. That's 1. Number 2, the differences lie, huge differences, in how they viewed the giver, the master. And thirdly, the differences lie in their destiny, how they were rewarded. So we'll look at these. The first one, how they viewed what was entrusted to them, the talent. By the way, let me just pause. Parenthetical statement. The talent here is a unit of weight, how they weighed money. And it's not, as modern day readers of the text, we might think of talent as something you're good at. And so sometimes we read this as saying that these people squandered their gifts, their talents, as in they were good at singing or good at acrobatics or whatever. That's actually not what it's talking about. Okay, it's talking about a unit of money, just to make sure we're understanding it. And my definition, as I'll be using it here, is not at what you're good at, although that factors in, because you need to use that for God, because he's entrusted it to you. But it is this. If you're taking notes, write this down so that you can keep this in mind as we go along. It is our measure of faith. That's the talents. That's how I'm going to be referring to them. That's the first one. I have 2 very short definitions. Our measure of faith, and 2, that which we can use to glorify God. That's our talent. So you be thinking as we go along, how many talents have you been entrusted to in your life from everyday life? What are the things you can use to glorify God with and express your faith in God? Do you have opportunities? Do you have 1, 2, or 5? In either case, you're required to use it and double it and increase it. But think about that, not as much as your abilities to do. You know, maybe sometimes you look at this passage, you think talents. Well, okay, if I have 5 talents, I can sing, and I can write, and I can prophesy, and da-da-da-da. Well, that's not exactly what it's talking about, I don't think. And so that's my view. I had a friend who was spending time in Romania as, I guess, a missionary, spiritual teacher, spiritual guide there, in a Romanian Bible school. And she said, as busy as she was and involved as she was in God's work, she would think of this passage and say, you know what, I'm not increasing my talents because I'm not doing much. It doesn't feel like I'm doing much. And it came to her that, no, it isn't what you do. It's the, kind of like I was saying here, it's how much you glorify God and show God forth. That's what we're talking about here. That's the trust God gave us, by the way, is to make his name great and glorify him. So that's what this is referring to. And how many opportunities do I have, do you have, to make his name great and to glorify him? And then the more we have, of course, the more responsible we'll be. So first of all, how did these in the story view it? First of all, those who used them well, the first two, it says that they gained more. And as is often the case with stories, you have to read between the lines. But to me, it's very clear that these first two servants were two things. They were diligent and they were resourceful. They would have had to be diligent and resourceful. So let's take note and do the same. Resourcefulness to me, let's take a look at the first one, resourcefulness. Resourcefulness to me is starting out sometimes with very little. So if you feel like you have very few opportunities to make God's name great and glorify him, watch out for that kind of reasoning, because to me, it can be many things. I'm reminded of a blogger from Canada who did an experiment. This wasn't necessarily glorifying God, but we can take a lesson from it. It was starting with small things and being resourceful. He did an experiment where he had a red paper clip. And we would say that's worth a fraction of a cent. And some of you may have heard of this experiment a couple of years ago. But his plan was to barter his way to something really big. And the story goes, he has it documented on his blog, so you could look it up. But the story goes that he started trading the paper clip. He traded for a pen, let's say. And in a year's time, he had a house. So, excuse me, I have a bit of a cough. So the point is, if you think in your spiritual life or Christian life that you have very few opportunities to glorify God, watch out, because maybe you have that red paper clip that you could trade for bigger things and get to a house and have 10 talents. And the other thing is, we are called to redeem the time and learn from every minute and learn from every situation and learn from trials and temptations and good times and bad times. And we're called to be resourceful. And that's very closely tied to the second one, diligence. We are to be stewards. We're supposed to be dependable and trustworthy and not complain about how little we start with. Because there's an old song, you know, there's work for all to do. There's something for all to do, you know, and I think that's really true. There's also the case of D.L. Moody's revivals in Britain that this lady, who was an invalid, was praying for him. And I guess we could say if anyone had one talent, it was her, because all she could do was lie in bed, and she heard about D.L. Moody coming to Britain, and so she prayed most of her waking hours, I guess, for a couple days. And it would turn out to be a hugely successful revival, and many, many people came to know God. And later, D.L. Moody said, I don't know what changed. Something was different in this revival. And someone else who knew the invalid lady said, I know what it was. It was this lady praying. And he said, tell that lady, you know, thank that lady. I really felt her prayers. So, you know, diligence and resourcefulness in the little we have been given can go a long way. I also want to say, diligence means even if you have a lot of talents, you have to be steadfast. We have to keep doing it. The church in Thessalonica thought that Jesus was coming back soon, And so they had kind of abated their work. Paul says, he is coming back soon, but keep working. Be diligent. So that's for us as well. And then the differences. What's the difference? Well, the irresponsible servant, it is safe to say, was not resourceful and diligent. And he buried his money in the ground, his talent. But to me, that's one of the sadder verses in the book of Matthew, and maybe in the whole Bible. Buried his talent in the ground. And so for us, what is the opposite of being diligent and resourceful with the opportunities we have to glorify God? It's burying our talent in the ground. And I'm reminded, too, of G.K. Chesterton's words when he was talking in his book, one of his books, about what the greatest sin is in life. I don't know if you've given that much thought. What's the greatest sin ever? And he said that it's suicide. And he stopped a bit and think, okay, how is suicide the greatest sin? And I think it is a great sin. And you probably think, okay, well, that really absolves me because I'm not really, don't have a death wish, right? Well, not so fast, because what he's actually also referring to, he's talking about literal suicide, but he's also referring to kind of this burying our talent in the ground. It's this kind of, as he says it, I'll just read a bit, it is the refusal to take an interest in your existence. Do you ever feel that? I know I do. You just kind of want to clock out, right? The refusal to take the oath of loyalty to life. And he goes on to say, the man who kills a man, but the man who kills himself kills all men. So if you're killing that inner spirit and that inner sort of potential to glorify God, you're killing the whole world, killing all beauty. So let's live with a purpose, and let's not commit spiritual suicide and bury our talent in the ground like this third servant did. The second difference, or area of difference, is how they viewed their master. The first one was how they viewed their gift, what they were entrusted with. The second is how they viewed their master. The trustworthy servant, start again with the good example. It's obvious that they viewed their master's decree or command with a sense of urgency. It says here in the text that we read that he went on a long journey or a faraway place. But still we don't know, they didn't know, I'm sure, exactly when he'd return. Now, for the first one, I can't help but go to the negative one. He probably thought, if it was a long journey, I've got time. I'll just kind of wait a bit. And plus, he had these ideas about the guy's character, about the master's character. But the first two notice how they immediately went to work, and they didn't squander their time. If it was a long journey or a short one, we have to take every minute and use it well. And so they, of course, as we know, were able to double their resources. But what that tells us is that two things. They took very seriously what their master entrusted them with. And they also very firmly believe that their master is worthy of having his resources doubled. And so, if we can just take the application to immediately to the 21st century here. Do we believe two things, and when we think of our view of the master, that he is worthy of having his resources doubled, and also that it is his, and that he's entrusting us with it, and we have to be careful with it. So it comes back to our view of the master. If the third servant would have had a proper view of the master, I can assure you that he would have taken those talents, and he would have with all due diligence, with haste, he would have tried to double them. So it comes back to our view of the master. If we have a reverential kind of fear of God, and if we believe his name to be great and his glory worth spreading, then we will take our talents, and with every waking minute, we will try to do just that, to increase them, to make his name great. But the irresponsible servant's view of God in verse 24 and 5, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. By the way, just parenthetical again. Is that true that the irresponsible servant gave God what is his? Not really. That's a false statement, because he should have had, at the very least, he should have had interest to go with it. So it's not true. He didn't return everything that was the master's. But let's pause and look at three things from that verse, 24 and 25, how this man viewed the giver, the master, God. How did he view him? Three things to me I can see. First one, he viewed his master as unfair. It says, you reaped where you didn't sow. And then the parallel phrase there, you gathered where you didn't scatter seed. I just want to point out, that's not a refrain that is unique to this time period. You still hear people saying, if there is a God, he's very unfair. Okay. So, but let's notice then at the end how God deals with this kind of thinking. He doesn't have a lot of, at the end, and the final reckoning, doesn't really give it a lot of light of day. So I just want to, this is sobering to me as we think of this. But again, coming back to the negative view of God in the second difference here, the differences between their views of the master. The second one thought God was unfair, number one. Number two, he viewed God as an unrelational policeman, police officer. I was afraid, it says. I was afraid. Again, this is a common view of God that is false. That people, I myself, we think of God as being kind of this police officer in the skies ready to pounce on us. And so we just kind of move about and do the most we have to do to get by. And then later there will be a reckoning. But no, the first two had it right. God is not this unrelational policeman. He is a beautiful, majestic God who wants his name to be spread abroad throughout all of creation. The third thing we see about his view of God is he viewed his master as unworthy of glory. There you have what is yours. All right. You're not worthy of increasing that which you gave me. It's implicit here in the text. It doesn't say it in so many words. But he viewed his master as unworthy of glory. I just have written down here, when we glorify our master, we use what he's given us to gain more because we know, number one, he's the source of it, and number two, he'll use it perfectly. I'm going to read that again. When we glorify our master, we use what he's given us to gain more because we know, number one, he's the source of it, so we owe it to him, and number two, he will use it perfectly. That which we get him as an increase, he'll use it perfectly. It will be a beautiful thing. He'll do us well. The third difference is in how they were rewarded, their destinies. First two, the positive ones. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things, I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. What sweeter words? And then, of course, the other one, you wicked and lazy servant, and cast him into outer darkness. The contrast here. Where are we in this continuum? I'm also thinking of one of the classic Christian writers, what he wrote. He said there are two groups of people in the world. One says, Lord, let thy will be done. And this would obviously have been the first two servants. Let thy will be done. The second group of people in the world God says to them, are you with me? God says to them, let thy will be done. And if you think about the incredible vast difference in those two groups of people, and we see them perfectly in this parable, the outcome of us bending our hearts and our bodies and our minds and saying, God, let thy will be done, or us not doing that, at the end God having to say to us, thy will be done. In other words, in this case, be cast into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I don't know what all that entails, but it doesn't sound good. So I think we definitely want to be in the first group. The first two were given tremendous gifts, and they saw the significance. The third one was given tremendous gifts, and he did not see the significance. The first two were motivated by the rightness of what they were doing, and that was their reward. That was reward enough. And then, and this is a direct application, if you're following here, for us as well, do we find joy in our service today as we glorify God and make his name great? That's our calling. If we do, if we don't, I don't know that we're truly spreading his name and making it great, because there is reward enough in that. But I just want to make one little observation about our master, if I can, is that even in all that joy that those first two were experiencing, even in all of that would have been reward enough, making his name great, doing his business. He was a good master, or he is for us anyway, if the one in the original story wasn't, and the third one is right. Even in all of that, they got rewarded much more at the end. And that's the same way for us, that even as we have a wonderful God that we're serving today, and there's so much joy in what we're doing in the present, we look forward to hearing, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant, enter thou into the joy of thy Lord." That is just the kind of lavish love that God gives to us. In Psalm 84, it says that there is no good thing that he withholds from those that love him in this life, as we're increasing the talents, but then much more in the hereafter. There is no good thing if you're in God and he's your master and you're increasing his talents. There is no good thing that will be withheld from you. Not only are you kept from all bad things, Psalm 84 says, there is not one good thing under the sun that will not come your way at some point, if you're patient. So that they were motivated by the rightness of it. But they were also, I'm sure, looking forward to their master's reward. And we should be the same. Whereas the wicked servant didn't enjoy it while he was doing it, and I'm sure he didn't enjoy his reward, if you want to call it a reward. I want to spend just 1 minute here on this third point of the differences in their reward. For us today, how does this look? I think that as we're developing our talents and bringing God glory, I think we should be very careful that we don't get too hung up on the final reward. We should try to find joy just in this delightful work that he's given us. And I think that sometimes we have sort of a syndrome as Christians that we can get, well, there's a saying that says, so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good. And there's kind of this sentimental view about heaven and, that we're going there and that's kind of our chief joy in life. But to me, that indicates that we have checked out or we've disengaged from the work that we're to do now. And so I just want to encourage us, wherever we are on this continuum, to work and take joy in it. And yes, have in the back of our mind that there will be an ultimate reward, but not to become so focused on it that it actually distracts us from the work that we're doing now. God is an eternal God. He will reward us eternally. But for now, he wants us to enjoy and to participate and to be rewarded the work that we have now. Dallas Willard has a quote here that I want to read. He talks of our reward as being eternal but starting now, and I like that. He says, our destiny as Christians and as faithful stewards, I could add, our destiny is to join a tremendously creative team effort under unimaginably splendid leadership on an inconceivably vast plane of activity with ever more comprehensive cycles of productivity and enjoyment. So now, those were sort of big words, but I think basically what he's saying is just, Dallas Willard is saying, enjoy it now, but know that it'll get better. And also I'm thinking of the hymn that I'm assuming you sing at this church sometimes too. Or if you don't, you should. You sing beautifully. Check out this hymn to add to your repertoire if you haven't yet. I thank thee, Lord, that here our souls, though amply blessed, can never find, although they see, excuse me, a perfect rest, nor ever shall until they lean on Jesus' breast. That's our experience. We're enjoying this time. We're rewarded by it. We find joy in it. Yet there's kind of this ache that will never be filled until the master comes back and says, well done. Another phrase in that hymn, so that earth's bliss may be our guide and not our chain. And that's That's where we find ourselves. Somebody put it this way. We're in the already but not yet. Already but not yet. Which seems like a contradiction on the face of it. But that's where we find ourselves. But just know, brothers and sisters, wherever you are, just know that you have a good God, and if you're faithful to him, he'll take care of you. And he'll delight you and reward you higher than any of your wildest expectations. So just to recap the 3 points, there were huge differences here. Let's search our hearts and figure out where we are. They viewed that which was entrusted to them differently, very differently, and the results were different as well. Secondly, they viewed the giver differently, which is very tied to the first one. And thirdly, they were rewarded differently. Their destiny was differently. It was very different. So let's make sure that we are like the first two and not like the last. George Mueller, it is said, prayed the Bible on his knees 100 times in his lifetime. He read the Bible 200 times and prayed it 100 times. I don't have that documented very well, but that's at least the oral tradition. Martin Luther tried to read it twice a year, and I guess I would add, still missed some pretty obvious things. But anyway, so some of those heroes of the faith, they increased their talent. That's the point. And I really think that, this just wrapping up here and some takeaways, it's not automatic that we're going to be the first or second servant. It's not automatic. We have to take this very, very seriously, and we have to be consumed by it. Else God will be like he was to the third one, you wicked and lazy servant, be cast into outer darkness. Because this is not child's play here. We are given the opportunity. In fact, we're called to make his name great. And if we fall down on the job, God will not be happy because he's given it to us. This is not just, you know, some trust of 100. By the way, you know how much money this was? This was a talent of gold. Even for the first one, it would have been something like $1 million in today's money. This is 100 pounds of gold or silver. We're not sure which precious metal it was. But let's not get hung up on the details. But in any case, Jesus was making the point that it was a very important charge. And so he's not just being charged with, you know, make sure the cows don't die and that the horses survive, you know, until I come back. This is an incredibly important charge. And in the same way for us, we have to be consumed by it, else we will be in the party of the third servant. I don't want to sound like a dire kind of sidewalk prophet, but really that is what I think. So I'm reading the passage. And what I was going to say is, you know, we may need to do something that radical of reading the Bible twice a year or reading it through 100 times in our lifetime. We may need to do that. It may take more than what we're doing. So God just wake us out of our slumber, I guess, is what I'm saying. And it is serious. I'm trying to exhort us, but at the same time, I need to balance it by saying, God is a good God, and he's patient with us, and he will make sure that we have ample opportunity to learn how to increase his talents that he's given us. Every good gift, James 1, and every perfect gift is from above, comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. He wants us to be that special nation, that royal priesthood. And he's patient with us, but we have to do our part. So, in closing, I have 2 things. Then I'll let you go, because I don't know if you've ever heard this old adage that public speakers are supposed to not talk more minutes than they have years. So if you were keeping track of the time, you know that I'm almost over time, if you know my age. But anyway, what this is to kind of wrap up things is, when we were little boys, I don't know how little we were, probably young teenagers, we would visit sometimes a family in Pennsylvania. We were living in Missouri at the time, I'm pretty sure. And there was a family there that had a weight set where young boys lift up their weights, right? And there was a boy there. They had a son whose name was Lyle. And Lyle was kind of a slender, slim young man. But when it came time to lift weights, he put us all to shame. I'm not sure how he did it, because goodness knows he wasn't blessed with, you know, with the biggest body in the world. But he took it so seriously that when he came, he could lift maybe 50, I want to say 100, but on the safe side, to be on the safe side, let me say 50 pounds more than the second best boy that was in the room. And there were some boys who were bigger than he was. And he took it seriously. And it was sheer discipline that he got there. And I just want to hold that out as an example for us. As we are entrusted with spreading God's glory, as we are entrusted with making his name great and increasing his talents, that we take it every bit that seriously. The second thing is, I was only allowed to say two things, right? So I'm on my second thing. I would have had a third one. But anyway, the second thing is, in the old order, I want to end with the Lord's Prayer, but I want to lead up to it a bit. In the old order Amish tradition, they pray the Lord's Prayer at least once every church service. Maybe twice, I don't know, but it's at least once. And so when my family left the old order Amish, we left probably in the last 15 or 20 years, 20 years I guess it would have been, sometime after we left, my uncle, who remained old order Amish, was talking with my mom, and he said, you know, I have one complaint, or beef, I guess, with you Amish Mennonites, and that is that you don't pray the Lord's Prayer often enough. I think he put it more tactfully than that. And my mom was a little dumbfounded at first, but she said, yeah, I guess you're right. And so I want us to encourage that, to me, kind of the best response to this challenge of being good stewards is to have the Lord's Prayer and live it out. If you think of some of those phrases, thy will be done. Okay, this is not a taciturn kind of, I guess, let it be done. It's thy will be done by all means, because it's the only way to live. And then another one is, let thy kingdom come. Give us this day our daily bread, is another phrase. And deliver us from evil. Don't lead us into temptation, right? To me, this is a recipe for increasing, a formula for increasing our talents in living to God's glory. If we pray that and mean it and make it the center of our lives. So as we close here, I want you to just maybe stay in your seats, and we'll just pray it softly together, audibly, and be thinking about it, and put it to practice, please. Let's all put it to practice in the coming week so that God's name could go out and be great, and that he would receive glory, and that we wouldn't be shirking as we live out this prayer, wouldn't be found shirking as we live out this prayer. So all together, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Thank you very much, and may God's presence be with you, and God bless you.